The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. Salute a Veteran Every Day is underwritten by RBR Physical Therapy. Are you in pain or in discomfort? Start your journey of relief at RBR Physical Therapy, located at 1300 Corporation Parkway, Suite B in Raleigh. And our guest today for Salute a Veteran Every Day is Haley Cole. Haley is a Navy veteran. Welcome, Haley.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm fine, and it's an honor to have you here today.
Thank you.
Hear about your service through the Navy. Tell us what you did.
I was a mass communication specialist in the Navy, which is the equivalent to a journalist or news broadcaster. That's primarily what I did. I joined in 2008 in the summer. I was serving overseas for about 5 years in Japan. Well, I lived in Japan for about 6 years. I served for about 4 years in Japan. And I worked north of Tokyo at Yokota Air Base, which is where American Forces Network, or AFN, is located. For those people who might not know what that is, it's pretty much a news channel for the military. It's where service members or their families can get information about what's going on or what we're doing out there. And AFN in Tokyo is pretty much covering the South Pacific region, but up all the way to Alaska. And they go out to Guam, covers all of Japan. It's pretty expansive news territory. India, Sri Lanka.
Sounds like a major network.
It is, yeah.
And in the States, oftentimes AFN gets mentioned at these big sporting events like the Super Bowl, and they talk about people listening on the AFN network.
Well, and we send our guys in there to represent or to take pictures of those sports games sometimes. That's sometimes the job that mass communication specialists will have. Or in other services, they have the equivalent of those positions as well.
So what was a typical exciting day that you had?
Oh, it ranged. it depended really if I was on base or if I was being sent on, because I worked with the Air Force, they called it TDY in the Navy. It would be a deployment. I didn't actually serve on a ship. I was on what we would call shore duty the whole time. But it could be anything from literally covering a story on Girl Scout cookies, like base kids are selling cookies, get to base, and I'd go down and videotape a bunch of girls doing their, you know, Girl Scout thing. That would be a basic day. And then there were times when I got sent out to the middle of the jungle of North Thailand, not far, like I could see Cambodia from where we were. So it was things like that. And that was probably, that first trip was several weeks.
What story was that? What was it?
Okay. Boy, you're going to ask me hard questions. It was not Cobra Gold. There we go. Cobra Gold, I believe, 2010. Yeah.
And for our civilians?
Sure. So every year, different militaries get together. That can be either just American militaries or worldwide militaries. And Cobra Gold is an exercise that, gosh, like five different militaries do. It's the Thailand military. It's some of them come in from Singapore. It's the Air Force, United States Air Force. It's the coast. There's even a couple Coast Guard, U.S. Coast Guard guys out there sometimes. It just depends. It's the Navy. It's the Marines. It's sometimes Army. I was out there with, you know, doing stories on Army vets that were out there doing, like, veterinarians that were doing work on animals in villages. It ranges what you cover, what you get exposed to. It was very interesting from that regard.
Very wide range.
Yeah. I learned a lot just from the traveling and the meeting different people and things.
The veterinarians, they're doing that for the local people?
Well, so what happens is, so they send in like a medical team, and the medical team even, you know, as you know, when, well, as not everybody would know, on bases, they have their own veterinarian clinics. And so oftentimes a veterinarian will get deployed on these exercises because, sure, I mean, there's animals in these countries. And a lot of these countries that are impoverished don't have these easy access, especially places like Thailand, where some places are so remote. I mean, I didn't realize how really third world in spots it is, truly.
It's an eye-opener.
Yeah, it really is. It was.
What about, what were your living conditions like? Were you staying overnight in these places?
In Thailand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was out with the Marines for a little while, but because I was mass communications at my job, I had to come back and edit stories. I stayed in a hotel, so I wasn't out in the jungle roughing it, really.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to, though.
That old trick.
Yeah, I know.
It's to protect the equipment, right?
Actually, it is.
But it's
because,
true.
Yeah, because, I mean, we walk around with sometimes 80 pounds of equipment, expensive equipment at that. You have to protect it from the elements, the rain, the heat, the whatever, whatevers.
Yeah, back in my day, you had to really be concerned with humidity. And
I bet.
Tape on the head and everything.
Film exposures.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine what all that would have been like. I don't know if you were doing photos or just print, but yeah, it would have been, those were the guys that I look to and I go, those were the real, because you guys were out there roughing it, really roughing it, so I respect that.
So what kind of equipment were you using?
Video cameras. I didn't do a lot of still shots, but it was all video, so I don't recall. It was a Sony something or other.
Uh-huh.
But I would go out there and film the footage myself and do the interviews, hook up the mics, then turn around and film myself, you know, doing an introduction or whatever. And then at the end of the day, go back to the hotel sometimes, which was at 1 o'clock in the morning, edit, write the story, match the story to the footage and send it back to Japan so that they could air it the next day or two or whatever, depending upon how long the story was. Sometimes it took much longer than that to put a package together.
That sounds like that would prepare you for a good civilian job.
Yes. Communications, it definitely prepares a person for a communications position, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends who work in public affairs as a result.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that or thought about doing that?
Well, ironically, when I got out, I chose a different path and went back to my original path prior to the Navy, which was psychology. So I went in for, I'm just finishing my counseling degree now.
Good for you.
So it's still sort of related because it's, you know, people-to-people interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not in a military facility anymore.
Now let's back up to
Navy.
Coming into the Navy. What made you come in?
Well, I come from a pretty patriotic family, and I was older when I joined. I was 30. It was that whole, I think, I was actually doing accounting at the time. I kind of have a wide base of careers, but I was like, I wanted to do something more important with my life, and I was watching a John Wayne movie one night, and I was like, oh, I'm joining the Navy. So I don't know. It just seemed right to me, and I had wanted to join at 18. But at the time, I wanted to be on subs, and women couldn't do it at the time. And it was a deterrent. I was like, well, if I can't be on a sub, I'm not joining. So I didn't join. But, you know, of course, now they've changed that.
That's
and
right.
Officers, I don't think it's anyone under an officer yet, a female that can be on a sub. I think it's still only officers.
So I bet you ran into a lot of interesting people in your job.
You know, I did, actually. That is one of the benefits about that particular type of job in the military is the people that you encounter. And it could be anyone from a high-ranking officer, general, that you normally, somebody that's exposed. Like, there are people that work with or people who work at the White House, for instance. You know, there are MCs there. But personally, I had a pretty good range. One of my favorite experiences was meeting Jane Goodall, who, for those of you who might not know, is a zoologist that studies chimpanzees, has been for decades and decades in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I think since her 20s, she went out there with her mom. But I got to interview her. She was doing a tour at, like, 87 in Japan, flying out like a 5-month tour all over the world, and talking about her experiences living in the jungle, what she learned from chimpanzees. And she's a very lucid, well-spoken, sincere woman. She's very passionate about those animals. So that was really interesting. And she was always somebody I looked up to as a kid, so I was super excited. So that was great. And You know, one of my experiences going TDY to Guam, or doing like a deployment out to Guam, I got to meet veterans from World War II and Vietnam that I would have never encountered otherwise. One in particular, he was actually one of the guys that was able to escape when they bombed Pearl Harbor. He survived that by seconds, literally, had gone for leave with his buddy, and unfortunately all of his buddies didn't make it. But to hear his story, and it was fascinating to me. And then there was another gentleman who was flying in a C-130, and they were shot. They weren't shot down, and he was under Patton. So that's a piece of history that to me was amazing. And another gentleman, he was part of the first bombing that took off from Anderson Air Force Base in Guam that ended the Vietnam War. He was one of the first pilots that, you know, was in there that was the final takedown. That was interesting because there wasn't a lot of exposure that I had at that point to that particular war in history. So I was grateful for those meetings.
And how do you get these assignments? I guess
it's like anything. If you show a particular interest in it or a talent for something, it's a selection process sometimes. And it's who has the wherewithal to go certain places, because it's not always easy. Sometimes it sounds glamorous, like we will escort actors or singers on base, like when they go and perform on bases. And then sometimes literally they're out there filming guys out in the jungle doing historical documentaries. So it's not always an easy gig, but it's definitely a fun one.
Mm-hmm. When you came into the Navy, how did you get into the mass communications area?
Kind of randomly, actually, which probably would hurt a few people's feelings, because I guess it's a hard field to get into. It's highly sought after, because there aren't a lot of, we'll say, fun jobs in the military, because they're hard.
It sounds so glamorous.
It does. It's fun. It's not as, it's a lot of work, and it's pressure because it's deadlines, constant deadlines. It's the news. You got to get stuff out there before it's done. But I went to join, and I met, like I mentioned earlier, I was older when I joined. So I had already had a feel for what I wanted to do, and I knew I didn't want to go on a ship, which sounds weird because I wanted to be in the Navy, but I wanted to work at an embassy or something. I wanted to be overseas. And so I figured, well, if I do administration or something, and I went in and they were like, well, yeoman, which is what they call admin people, is full. You can't get that. So how about like postal clerk, which is literally delivering the mail? And I'm like, no. And we went through that whole rigmarole. And then I was just not going to do it. And they called me and said, well, have you had any experience with journalism, or do you have any interest in news coverage? And I had actually taken journalism in college for a little bit. And so I was like, well, sure. And is there overseas with that? And they were like, well, yeah. So I was like, okay, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I ended up.
Yeah. Well, civilians, I think, would be surprised at the bargaining and that you can do in the military.
I think it would be so beneficial for the younger kids joining to know that they really can bargain, really. I mean, it's their career, it's their livelihood, and it's when you're going into a job that is can be that sometimes, I don't want to say not exclusive, but secluding at times, mm-hmm. because you're out there with just a select group of people for sometimes months and months. You want to pick something, you know, that you're going to either enjoy or be good at or whatever. And oftentimes I feel like young kids aren't aware of their interests, so they go in and do whatever. And maybe that's why they get out, because they didn't understand maybe what their strengths are. In my opinion, I think there needs to be a better assessment of personality traits along with skills to match better. Mm-hmm. But there's always going to be needs in the military period that have to be met no matter what. So somebody's going to have to do it, which, again, you get those guys who are like, I'm going to do it. And those girls, too. You know, we're standing up for our country, doing our jobs, whatever they, you know, their motivation is.
And once you get in, you learn the system, too, and you can you know, work your way to what you want. I know when I first came in, I was in personnel, and I thought that was the end of the world.
Yeah.
As it turned out, it helped me throughout my career to understand the personnel system.
Yeah, I bet.
Where's home for you? Where did you grow up?
Washington State. I'm from Seattle originally. Mm-hmm. Well, I grew up back and forth in between Eastern and Western Washington, but Seattle mostly. Mm-hmm. That's where I last called home before I joined.
Mm-hmm. What was that like? What were your interests growing up?
Oh, gosh. Music, really, actually. I had like everybody in Seattle in the 90s, I had a band. So it was a lot of art exposure at the time for me. And a lot, not as much outdoors it later became, but Washington State, for those who haven't been, is so vast in outdoor activities.
Yes.
There's water, there's mountains, there's the desert, which a lot of people don't know, farmlands. There's, you can do anything. It's seasonal everywhere. You get four seasons in the whole state, which is great. It's temperate.
My wife and I were out there a couple of years ago, my first time, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Didn't get to the eastern Washington. You said you went between the
two,
Seattle and the east.
So my grandparents had a wheat farm in central Washington, and I went to high school in Spokane, which is technically eastern.
Yeah.
Central, they're right on, the farm is right on the cusp of east, central and eastern. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so I'm all over the state.
Uh-huh. What was Spokane like?
Spokane is a completely different vibe than the west side. It's quieter, it's more family oriented, but there's a lot of history. Architecturally speaking, I love old houses, and there are some amazing homes that were built there that aren't built in other cities. So that part to me is fascinating. Like Cutter, John Cutter, I think, if I get that wrong, I believe his first name is John, but there are some Cutter houses there. And I just find the art and the work that went into building those things beautiful. Mm-hmm. So Spokane's interesting from that, and of course there's tons of railroad history there, and so from that aspect it's cool, and the mountains are right there. And
do you have any siblings?
I have one younger sister. Mm-hmm. I do. Yep. Mm-hmm. She's 5 years younger than I am. I guess you would call her a horsewoman. She has horses and does Western shows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But she's still out there. She lives in Spokane.
Do you have any interest in horses?
I absolutely love horses. Yeah. I grew up on horses, but unfortunately I developed a hideous allergy to horses. So it's terrible. But my children love horses, so I'm going to get exposed either way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe it's in the bloodline. So.
It totally is. I mean, my family, they're all cowboys.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely in the bloodline.
What did your parents do?
My grandparents were farmers. My dad was originally a farmer, but he was also an investor, so he had an investment company. And my mom was an interior designer. She didn't farm, but the rest of my family did farm, and they flew pilots. So.
Mm-hmm. What did they think of you going in the Navy? They're supportive.
They were, because very patriotic family, and in my family, in my generation, whatever, I guess it wasn't as common for women to be joining the military, but my family was always like, it doesn't matter if you're a girl, do whatever. I grew up shooting guns, and I started driving farm trucks when I was 8. Mm-hmm. So the military wasn't a far stretch for them. And I've been wearing combat boots since I was 12, so my mom was like, I should have known then.
Let's jump all the way over to Tokyo now.
Okay.
That must have been very exciting for you.
Well, it was a culture shock at first, to be honest. Yeah. I had been traveling for years prior to that, just on my own, but I had never been to Asia. And it was vastly different than the European countries I had been to. And so I just wasn't expecting how different the culture is. But it was eye-opening. And, oh my gosh, the Japanese people are so gracious and lovely. And I was fortunate enough, after I lived on base, I married my husband, who I met in the military, in school, in the States before. But I stayed in Japan with him because he was stationed in Japan as well, and we lived out in town. So we got to really experience the Japanese culture, and our neighbors were sensational. I was pregnant at the time, actually, and my husband was deployed, and they would come over and check on me and bring me fruit, and, you know, and I don't think we really could communicate very well because my Japanese, unfortunately, was terrible. Uh-huh. And their English was better than my Japanese, but... just lovely, lovely people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yes, I've spent a little time in Tokyo and find that to be true too.
Yeah, and it's clean, right?
Yes.
So clean. It's shocking to me.
Very, very honest people. The person that I visited over there, who was an Air Force colleague, the home did not have locks on the doors or windows.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
I'm not totally surprised depending upon where it was, but I literally have lost money, like Japanese yen or American dollars, out of my back pocket. So has my husband, because we're terrible about that, or at least we were when we were there. And we've been chased down by Japanese people giving it back to us. Mm-hmm. I lost my wallet that had everything in it, and they turned it into the police station, mm-hmm. and the Japanese police got a hold of the base, and the base called me. Mm-hmm. And when I very first arrived, I think I'd been there maybe 2 months, and I was taking the train from North Tokyo to my husband's base, which was Yokosuka, and I got terribly lost, and this older Japanese man knew I was lost because I just was staring at this map that's all in, you know, katakana, and I couldn't read it, and kanji, and he said, "Yokosuka?" And I was like, "Yes." And he was carrying a box of Krispy Kreme donuts. And I was just like, "Okay." And he was like, wrong stop. And he got off the train. He's like, "You come with me." And at first I was like, but I, you know, just had been told so much that the Japanese... honor is very important to them, especially in the older generation. And he got me to the right train and to the right stop, and it was in the wrong direction he was going.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not unheard of. And the other thing you see that blew my mind at first was little kids on the train, taking the train to school themselves. Mm-hmm. And like 4-year-olds, maybe five. The first time I saw it, thought they were either lost or I should maybe take them to the police and say, hey, but it's not uncommon because those kind of things that happen here don't happen there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's just not the same at all.
Well, that's kind of sad on our part.
It's, yeah.
How about the food?
Well, you know, I'm an adventurous eater, but I'm a particular eater, and there's a lot of textures, I'll be honest, I wasn't real fond of.
Textures.
But it's beautiful. Half of it looks like art. Mm-hmm. I mean, the infusion, or a lot of French, actually, influence in their desserts, so they have fantastic, beautiful desserts. In random train stations, they have these amazing bakeries where, you know, gorgeous cream puff pastries that are just to die for, really. So.
Now, what time period were you there?
I was there from 2009 until 2000 and almost 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
My time there was between 78 and 80.
Wow.
Three TDY visits there.
Yeah. It would have been. I would have been curious to see some of those differences.
How'd you meet your husband?
Well, actually, right after boot camp, they send military to a training school, and in the Navy it's called A school. Mm-hmm. So they sent me to A school, and he had just gotten there maybe 2 months before me. Mm-hmm. And we met in A school, and we were both placed in leadership positions that caused us to have daily interactions, and we were just buds.
Mm-hmm.
Became
mm-hmm.
friends, and, well, we were engaged rather quickly, but the engagement was very long. But, yeah, so.
Two children?
Two children, yes. Mm-hmm. We have a 6-year-old boy and a 3.5-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm. And you live in Raleigh?
We do. We live in Raleigh. But we are actually headed back to the West Coast maybe in the next year or so, mm-hmm. or at least looking to do that, just to.
So back to Yokota, MWR, Morale, Welfare, and Recreation,
uh-huh.
Has trips. Did you do some of those? And what, if so, where did you go?
Well, I didn't, actually.
Oh, okay.
I definitely did stories for some of the base members that I had experiences with those that used them to go back and forth to Europe, I think was one, actually.
Your job was taking you on trips.
Yeah, I was traveling anyway all the time, exactly. Locally in Japan, the local trips, I'm trying to think, a lot of people did Fuji.
Fuji.
Yep. That was a big one. A lot of people climb it. It's a day trip. I don't think it takes a full day to get there. I think it's like a half day up there, but it's a trek or 7 hours or something. It's a hike.
did you ever take the bullet train?
I did. Yeah.
I didn't do that. One stop away was like $80.
Astronomical.
Does that sound right?
Where I ended up going to, it was more like 400, I think, but that was because it was a much longer journey. But I was actually also there during the earthquake in 2011. My husband and I got married 2 days prior to that, so that was also an experience. While we were there,
talk about that feeling.
So that was March, the earthquake was March 11th, 2011. It was on a Friday, I think. And my husband and I were supposed to get married in the church that Friday. But Wednesday we had to go to the courthouse and legally, you know, do the paperwork. And we went in to, you know, get everything done, and Friday wedding comes, and it was supposed to be later that afternoon, and we pull up in to do something. Something had shifted. I can't quite recall the details, and we were having to go to a train station instead, but we stopped by the store, and we pulled up, and for some reason, the car started rolling, and I, not thinking it was outside of us, thought it was the car, and my husband said, "Oh my gosh, look at those windows." And the building on base that was probably about 9 stories tall, all the windows were vibrating. And then the cars in the parking lot all started rolling. We didn't realize how bad it was at first, though. So we proceeded to go to the train stop anyway. And when we got there, which was probably 15 minutes later, the second aftershock hit. And, of course, later we found out, you know, all of those were over 7 point. But what we didn't know, of course, was then about that time the tsunami was hitting. Which, to be perfectly honest, the vibration and energy that was, you just could tell that something horrific was going on in the country. It was something.
Well, Haley, thank you for your service, and thank you for being here.
You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me. I heard a great quote once, "Service needs no thanks." I strongly believe that serving was a gift for me and my life, so I hope that more people are encouraged to serve later on, and we need bright and young, the best out there joining, so thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome, and thank you again, and I agree with what you said.
Aside from just career-wise, the closest bonds of my life I formed in the military. So it was a good experience, yeah.
Thank you, Haley Cole.
Yep.
Well, we've run out of time for this edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast right after this broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. Salute a Veteran Every Day is underwritten by RBR Physical Therapy. Start your journey of relief at RBR Physical Therapy, located at 1300 Corporation Parkway, Suite B in Raleigh. Address any comments or questions you have by calling us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. See you next time.